I'm Fiona Willard. I'm a lecturer in philosophy here in Southampton. And I mainly work in normative ethics, but I have a side interest in the philosophy of sex, and that's what I'm going to be talking to you about today. Today, I want to talk to you about the norm of monogamy. Now, the norm of monogamy is pretty much a default assumption in society. We assume that if we have a relationship of erotic love of any kind of seriousness, it should be monogamous. What I'm going to suggest today is that we should question the norm of monogamy. We shouldn't just assume without thinking about it that relationships of erotic love should be monogamous. In fact, I'm going to hope to persuade you that the norm of monogamy faces a puzzle, that there's a reason to think that maybe this norm doesn't actually make that much sense. However, once I've convinced you that there is a puzzle here, that there's a reason to be unsure about whether we should be monogamous, what I will hope to do is try and persuade you that this puzzle can be resolved, that we can defend the norm of monogamy in at least some cases. So I want to start off by talking about exactly what the norm of monogamy is. Now, I'm interested in monogamy as a norm and not as a state. So basically the difference there is you can be in a monogamous state if you just happen not to be sleeping with anybody else. But you see monogamy as a norm, you see yourself as governed by the norm of monogamy if not being monogamous, if having sex with somebody else would involve doing something wrong, typically betraying the person that you're in a relationship with. I usually think of these kinds of norms as relationship-based. So the thought is that in a particular relationship, we implicitly or explicitly agree about the terms of the relationship. So you and your partner will decide whether in that relationship it's permissible to have sex with other people, to be in love with other people. You'll decide in that relationship what norms govern that relationship, what sorts of things would be seen as betraying the other partner. So that means that you're only governed by the norm of monogamy if you're in a particular relationship where the partners have either implicitly or explicitly agreed to be governed by that norm. Most of the time, we agree implicitly. It goes without saying that we're going to be monogamous. So in most relationships, you don't actually sit down and say, let's have a talk about this. Should this be a monogamous relationship or not? Because the norm of monogamy is the default in our society, it does basically go without saying. We would think that somebody who said, well, I know that we've been going out for 7 years and that we live together and we have children together, but we never said this was going to be exclusive. If somebody said that to you, you would think, you're kidding, right? That would seem like a useless, a weak excuse. So in this society, monogamy is the default, and for that reason, we don't always think we have to have actually agreed to be governed by a norm of monogamy for relationships to be so governed. In our society, we just assume, usually. The norm of monogamy has, I think, two aspects. Or, as I say, there are two links in the chain of monogamy. The norm of monogamy places two kinds of restrictions. First of all, there's a restriction on what kinds of relationships are needed for you to be able to, for you to have sex with. So the thought is, it's only permissible to have sex in a certain kind of relationship, namely a relationship of what I call erotic love. It's a bit hard to specify exactly what erotic love is, but I think we can all recognise it. It's that kind of deep emotional connection that you have in successful marriages and long-term lovely relationships. We can all recognise paradigm cases. Those people are in love, and it's a sexual type of love. It's not the kind of love that you have between friends, and it's not the kind of love that you have between a mother and a father or cousins. So we can recognise relationships of erotic love, even if it's quite difficult to give a definition of a relationship of erotic love. So the first link in the chain of monogamy restricts sexual activity to relationships involving that type of erotic love. When you're in a relationship that's governed by the norm of monogamy, you're only permitted to have sex with people that you're in love with. The second part of the chain of monogamy, the second link in the chain, places a restriction on the number of these type of relationships that you're allowed to have. It's quite an extreme restriction. You're only allowed to have one relationship of erotic love at a time. So the norm of monogamy includes two restrictions: a restriction on what type of relationship sex is permitted within, and a restriction on the number of relationships of that type that you're permitted to be in at one time. So that's what the norm of monogamy is. Why is it puzzling? Well, I think that a little bit of thought reveals that there is something puzzling about this norm of monogamy. What do you get when you agree to be governed by a norm of monogamy? Well, you basically make a deal. You say, you, my partner, the person that I love, won't have sex with anybody who you're not in love with, and won't have a relationship of erotic love with anyone but me. And I, in return, will not have sex with anybody that I'm not in love with, and I won't be in love with anybody but you. So you restrict your own access to two things that seem to be good things. You restrict your access to sexual pleasure, and you restrict your access to relationships of erotic love. Now, this is important because relationships of erotic love they depend upon the person with whom you have the relationship with. So a relationship of erotic love with Bob is not the same as a relationship of erotic love with Alan. You get something new and different if you have a relationship of erotic love with Alan. And you might think this is something very valuable. In fact, you might think that the very relationship that the norm of monogamy is supposed to spring from involves recognizing the value of this relationship of erotic love. So the puzzle is, you give up your access to things that are of value, and in return, you get your partner also restricting his access to things that are of value. But why would you want this? I mean, when we love somebody, we're supposed to want them to have as many good things as possible. We're supposed to want good things for them. So why would his restriction seem like a good deal, a return for you restricting your access to things of value? Why would this be valuable at all? Why would it make sense to make this kind of deal? In order to show why this is something that we should question, I like to use the cookie eating example. If anybody said to me, I'd like to have a relationship with you, but if we're going to have a relationship, you have to accept that I don't want you to eat cookies with anybody else, I would say, that's crazy. I would say, even if it may upset you if I eat cookies with somebody else, but this is completely irrational. This is a crazy kind of emotion. what we should do is, maybe I will restrict myself from cookie eating for the moment, but the main priority is going to get you some help to get over your weird cookie jealousy. So we shouldn't just take people's reactions at face value. We shouldn't just say, well, a lot of people would find it upsetting. Most people would find it upsetting if their partner slept with somebody else. So let's adopt a norm of monogamy. What we have to ask ourselves is, why is the norm of monogamy different from the cookie-eating norm? Why does it make sense to want to restrict your partner's access to sex with other people and to relationships of erotic love with other people, when it doesn't make sense to restrict your partner's access to the joy of eating cookies with other people? So I hope I've persuaded you that there's at least some kind of puzzle here, something we need to look at. I'm now going on to try and give you an outline of my answer to the question. Now, I mentioned that the norm of monogamy includes two links. There are two links in the chain of monogamy. So if we're going to defend the norm of monogamy, we need to defend both those links. We need to both defend the restriction of sex to loving relationships and the restriction of loving relationships to a single loving relationship. So we need to defend this claim. You can't have sex with anybody you're not in love with, and the claim, that the demand, you can't be in love with anybody but me. So let's look at this first link, the link between sex and love. Why would it make sense to want to restrict sex to a loving relationship? Why would it be reasonable for somebody to be hurt at the idea of their partner having sex with somebody that they didn't love, when it wouldn't be reasonable for you to be upset at the idea of your partner eating cookies with somebody that he didn't love? I think that the answer to this lies in the role that sex can play in a relationship of erotic love. Sex is a very intimate activity. It's physically intimate, it involves touching and seeing parts of the body that you don't normally touch and see. It's also emotionally intimate, it involves a certain type of vulnerability, a letting yourself be seen in a vulnerable position, a position where you're overcome with a certain type of pleasure. And not just any old pleasure, but a pleasure that is found in and with that other person. So I suggest that sex is peculiarly suited to play a special role within a relationship of erotic love. Sex is well suited to both express the love that the partners feel for each other and to in some way constitute the emotional intimacy in that relationship. So sex is a way of telling the person, showing the person that you love them. But it is also a way of loving them, of being in love with them. One of the things that makes the relationship of erotic love different and special is that the partners take part in this very intimate activity, this activity which is focused on finding pleasure in and with the other person in a very intimate way. And I think that this means that we can see sex as having a special significance within a relationship. And if you think about sex in this way, I think it might be reasonable to be hurt at the idea of your partner having sex with somebody that they don't love. So the basic idea is you're thinking, this activity is a very special activity. It means something in the relationship. And then they go and partake in that activity where, without the meaning, with somebody who they don't love. And you can see this, I think, reasonably as undermining the ability of the sexual activity within the relationship to have the significance that you thought it did. One kind of trivial, perhaps trivial example that I like to use to try and illustrate this is the example of pet names. Suppose that you have a special name or phrase that you use to the person you're in love with. And you think of that as something special that you do together. And then you find out that they say this to everybody they meet. Well, that takes away the specialness of the name. It takes away the significance of the name. It undermines the ability of that name to express the intimacy in the relationship. So I think that's why it can make sense to want to restrict sex to a relationship of erotic love. Now remember, we're only talking about people who are in a relationship, so we're not talking about people who aren't in a relationship. If you're not in a relationship governed by the norm of monogamy, then you won't be required to restrict sex to relationships of erotic love. The thought is that when you have two people, they might agree that given the relationship they're in, they can't have sex with anybody else. So you're not saying anything about people who aren't in a relationship of erotic love. So the thought is, because of the special significance that sex can have within a relationship of erotic love, it can be reasonable for one partner to be hurt at the idea of another partner having sex with somebody they don't love. And because this hurt is reasonable, it's different from the hurt that somebody might feel at the idea of their partner eating cookies with somebody they didn't love. It's something that calls for recognition rather than therapy. So we should respond to this reasonable hurt by taking steps to avoid causing that hurt, by agreeing to restrict the sex to relationships of erotic love. However, at this point, I want to give a little caveat. Because whether you'll be hurt at the idea of your partner having sexual activity with somebody who they don't love will depend upon how you conceive of the activity which means so much in the relationship. You might think, actually, it's all sexual activity that's significant. Sexual activity is the significant activity. But you might draw a finer discrimination. You might say, it's sexual activity between me and my partner that's significant. You might think that there are particular types of sexual activity that are significant, doing that special thing we do. I suggest that all of these ways of conceiving of the significant activity are equally reasonable. So the question is going to be, how do the partners in the relationship conceive of the significant activity? If they conceive of all sexual activity as included into the significant activity, then this will suggest they should restrict sexual activity to relationships of erotic love. If they have a finer discrimination, so they just see a special type of sexual activity or sexual activity involving particular people as significant, then that would suggest they would adopt another type of norm. They might say, well, actually, it's okay to have sex with somebody else because that's not the same activity. Or they might have a norm which says you can have sex with other people, but you can't do the special thing that we do together. You can't do that thing with, you know, with my neck that you do. So my suggestion is that it can be reasonable to restrict sex to relationships of erotic love. But that depends upon how the partners within the relationship conceive of the significant act, the act which means so much to them. What about that second link, that link between love and exclusivity, that thought that you should only be in love with one person at a time? Why is it reasonable to restrict relationships of erotic love? I mean, this might seem to be really a more disturbing question. I mean, sex, all it really brings with it is sexual pleasure. But it's at the very heart of the relationship that we're trying to use to ground this restriction that a relationship of erotic love is a really valuable thing. So why would you want to restrict your partner's access to something like that? I'm going to suggest that it can be reasonable to restrict your partner's access to relationships of erotic love. It's, however, going to depend upon certain conditions being met. I take as kind of the paradigm example of a relationship of erotic love as being something like a marriage. So a relationship in which you're not just planning to be together for a short space of time, but you think of yourself as sharing a life, building a life together. These types of relationships are very demanding. They're very rewarding, but they require a lot of work. They require a huge amount of resources, emotional resources, financial resources, resources of time. And I suggest that it's going to be difficult to sustain more than one of these relationships at a time. And because these relationships can be so rewarding, it's worth protecting them by restricting the access, by saying, I'm going to focus on this one. Now, a natural puzzle here is, we don't usually think that it's okay just to say, you've got to give up everything but this relationship. We think that there's a problem in a relationship if you're required to stop seeing your parents because they're a threat to the relationship, or required to not go to work or not have personal projects because it's a threat to the relationship. Often, in fact, we see these relationships as recommending starting new relationships, which are very, very demanding. Often we see a natural way of moving on from these relationships is to start a family, and children are a paradigm example of demanding relationships. So why are the other relationships of erotic love special? Why do we have a norm which restricts the number of relationships of erotic love, but says that you can have other relationships which might be equally demanding and other projects which might be equally demanding? And here I think we have to look at the idea of what is needed to have a well-rounded overall life, the components of a good, well-rounded life. And it's often the case that these different relationships, these different projects, contribute something new and distinct to a well-rounded life. Some of the relationships aren't justified in this way. Relationships such as relationships with your parents, those are partly justified by previous obligations that you've already acquired those obligations. You can't suddenly abandon your parents because you found somebody new. So the suggestion is, a relationship of erotic love can't protect itself by requiring you to fail to fulfill already existing obligations. When we're talking about new obligations, new relationships, it can be you will be justified in having these relationships if they're contributing a new element to a well-rounded life. So the thought is that in a relationship of erotic love, we want to balance the needs of the relationship and the needs of the partners as individuals. And we don't want to have a restriction which prevents the partners from flourishing as individuals. So the key question is going to be, do these additional relationships of erotic love contribute to the partners flourishing as individuals? Do they give a new element of a well-rounded life? And the answer is going to be sometimes, but sometimes not. Often you'll find that one relationship of erotic love fulfills all your needs in that area. You wouldn't be able to flourish more if you had additional relationships of erotic love. If this is the case, then that says something quite nice, I think, about your relationship. It says, this is a really good relationship. It's very fulfilling. It's all I need. So what I want to suggest is that in certain relationships, two important conditions are met. First of all, the relationship is valuable enough to need protecting. It's the type of relationship where you need to devote those resources of time and energy and emotion to make the relationship flourish. And it deserves that kind of investment. And it's a rewarding enough relationship that it gives you everything you need in terms of erotic love. So additional relationships of erotic love wouldn't be contributing new elements of well-being. You can have a well-rounded life with just that relationship. Under those conditions, I think it makes sense to restrict yourself to a single relationship of erotic love. And that's going to be the case for many of us, I hope. But there are going to be some people for whom this isn't the case. There are two reasons why it might not be the case for you. It might be that you're just an incredibly energetic person. You can juggle two demanding relationships. Or it might be that you have a very large appetite for relationships of erotic love. Remember, we did point out at the beginning that one relationship of erotic love is not going to be the same as another. A relationship with a different person is different, will bring different things. So you might be the type of person who really would benefit from those additional relationships, would feel that is something I need. I need relationships with different types of people to have a fulfilling life. If you're that type of person, the energetic person and the person with a large appetite for love, then it might not make sense for you to be monogamous. But most of us aren't like that. Most of us aren't quite that energetic. So for most of us, it will make sense to restrict our relationships to a single relationship of erotic love. So to sum up, basically, what I've tried to persuade you of is that monogamy presents us with a puzzle. It stands in need of defense. We shouldn't accept it without thinking. Monogamy restricts the partner's access to two things that are valuable: sexual pleasure and additional relationships of erotic love. And we need to explain why this kind of restriction would be desirable. But I think that we can defend monogamy in certain circumstances. Monogamy makes sense if you meet certain conditions. First of all, you must have a particular way of understanding the significant act within your relationship. You must understand that as being sexual activity. That must be the act that you see as playing a significant role in your relationship. If you or your partner understand the significant act in that way, then it can be reasonable to restrict sex to relationships of erotic love. Secondly, if you see the relationship of erotic love as one that is both worth protecting, requires protection, because it is the type of relationship that demands a lot of you in terms of resources, and you see the relationship as a very fulfilling one, one that gives you all that you need in terms of erotic love, then it can make sense to accept the second link in the chain of monogamy, to restrict yourself to a single relationship of erotic love.